So today, I'm trying a little something new for worship. I'm speaking really from an outline instead of my usual written out script, although I have some extended quotes that I did not memorize, so I'll be reading those. And this kind of experimentation, pushing my boundaries, taking a risk, is central to the idea of the developmental ministry that we are in together. So I ask your patience as I try something a bit new. Today, as I said earlier, we will be hearing Brittany Packnett's 2018 Ware Lecture from our annual gathering of Unitarian Universalists, last year's General Assembly. We will gather at 2, listen, and then have a discussion with some questions generated by some folks at the Unitarian Universalist Association. So leading into the lecture today, and in keeping with our monthly theme of journey, I'm asking the question this morning, how do those of us who are white move forward on our journey to anti-racism, to being effective and trusted accomplices to people of color? I have been thinking how wonderful it would be to be here surrounded by people working on anti-racism together. Wouldn't that be something? And the thing about journeys, metaphorical journeys, sometimes physical journeys, is that really they're often never done. And the point is to keep on moving and developing and growing. And for those of us who want to engage in the work of anti-racism, that is certainly true. So I remind you that, as always, I'm preaching to myself this morning, not from a place of, oh, I'm there, because, oh, I am not there. None of us will probably ever get there, those of us who are white. I have a reading to start this morning from Chris Crass. He is a Unitarian Universalist activist, author, teacher for racial and gender justice. This reading is from an essay he wrote, "To All Get Free Together." And he tells us why this work, this anti-racism, matters for our Unitarian Universalist communities. He writes, "To become an anti-racist faith community, the key question for a white or white majority community is not how do we get people of color to join our faith community. It is instead, how can we make a prolonged, spiritually rooted, engaged commitment to uprooting white supremacy within this community and take ongoing collective action to challenge it in society? That's the question. Our goal is not to have white people sit alongside a person of color so as to affirm that those white people aren't racist. Our goal is to build and be part of beloved community, united to end structural oppression and unleash collective liberation in our faith communities, schools, neighborhoods, workplaces, and throughout society. Our goal is to join hands across the divisions of racism in our faith and in our communities and affirm the humanity in each other." So as Chris says, the work of anti-racism is not about achieving diversity to make us white people feel better, more comfortable and satisfied that we are good white people. It's about changing ourselves so we can change the world. Because if it's only about those of us who are white feeling good about ourselves, good about this community as an inclusive one, if that's all we're about, that makes us diversity vampires. We only want you for what you can do for us and how good you make us feel. That's true for many different groups. And to do that, to be diversity vampires, would be to center our white selves as the point. So today I want to talk about what some qualities of anti-racism that white people might take on, what does the path to that look like? It's important, certainly, to have some kind of confidence in ourselves that we can do this, right? We want to be trustworthy accomplices to people of color who are anti-racist leaders that we can be accountable to, right? Ultimately, it's all about effectiveness. So for those of us who are white, what does it take? Now, something that white people often express in person, in writing, I see this online, all over the place, is lots of anxiety in encountering other races and ethnicities, in encountering differences of all kinds, encountering the other. So I often hear white folks say that they're worried about their language, about their words, and how to behave when it comes to anti-racism. What if we're wrong? What if somebody calls me a racist? We see a lot of the public back and forth is too often about that, about being called racist. And if you were watching the congressional hearings, you saw that in full bloom. Some senator, is his name Mark Meadows? Yeah, he thought that another representative called out his behavior as racist in those hearings, in the Michael Cohen hearings. And he had a giant white hissy fit male meltdown right on the spot. The six steps of that. So we see it. So all of my personal experiences in encountering anti-racists who are people of color, whether that's in person or through their writing or online, identifying which of us white people is racist is not actually their goal. So you can let that anxiety go and you'll be the better for it. Maisha Z. Johnson from Oakland, California. She is of Trinidadian descent, a poet, a writer, an organizer for Black and queer liberation. This is what she writes. Speaking of derailment, when I'm talking about a racist act, I don't have much interest in whether or not the person responsible is a racist. If that sounds counterintuitive, then you could really use this clarification about addressing white supremacy. It's not about identifying people as racist. It's also not about bashing white people, but you may interpret it that way if you feel uncomfortable. And then you might white-splain that people of color are attacking you for no reason. When it comes to things like holding implicit biases and benefiting from white privilege, the question of whether or not someone is intentionally bigoted, whether someone is a racist, is completely irrelevant. So, you're not under attack if a person of color is talking to you about race, not even if they're calling you out for racism. Because it's such a sensitive topic, many white people interpret any mention of racism as a conflict. Instead, it's a matter of calling out actions that have a harmful impact. And someone being a good person doesn't make that impact vanish. So if you're called out for racism and you take it as a personal attack on your character, you're making the situation all about you, not the bigger picture of how all of us can take responsibility for our own role in white supremacy. Your belief that someone doesn't have a racist bone in their body can lead you to overlook the impact of what they've done and focus instead on their intentions. In other words, you're oversimplifying the issue, you're separating yourself from the bad guys, and you're saying that good people can't possibly do something wrong. So I invite you to put aside that anxiety. It is an expenditure of energy in the wrong direction, and none of us probably has enough energy for everything that we need. So let's use it, our energy, in the right way. Those of us who are white cannot walk around on eggshells worrying if a person of color is going to call us racist. That's not their work, as Ms. Johnson makes clear. And seriously, if you're a white person, you are going to engage in racist acts all the time. I don't think anyone here is going to be burning a cross on someone's lawn. And if you ever have that urge, please let me know and I'll talk you down. I don't think that's a threat. But I hear racist microaggressions in this congregation all the time. I've heard them from myself. I hear my own, this is the hard part, the subconscious bias. That's the awful one. The biases that are buried so deep in us as members of this white supremacist culture that we just don't even know it's there. And our unconscious biases can be as deadly as our overt ones, as we have seen over and over again. So what is helpful? Because we all need help. Being willing to take risk with your behavior, to put yourself out there into anti-racist work, by showing humility, by being willing to be corrected and accept it gracefully. Because when you can't do these things, you're making it all about you. And that is centering your white self and using your white privilege to avoid hard learning and change. And so if you're not worried about hiding your racism or being called out for your racist acts and behaviors, you are then so much more free to be the best accomplice to people of color working to end racism, because you don't have this buzz of anxiety in the back. What if I say the wrong thing? You're gonna say the wrong thing. That's guaranteed. And it's not a condemnation of you as an entire person. So if you're willing to say that you know you have benefited from being white, that's part of the humility. Seeing your white privilege. And I know that those of you who are white did not ask for this privilege. I didn't ask for it. It's just a fact. Our nation, every system in it, is saturated with white supremacy. Whether we want it to be or not, we white people have benefited. So I want to be super clear about something. Having white privilege doesn't mean that I haven't suffered or struggled in my life. I am, after all, a woman in this world. It simply means that none of my suffering or struggle has come to me because of systemic bias and oppression about my skin color. Never. None. Not from our systems. That's the big deal. So what needs to end is that anyone should ever suffer from bias and oppression because of the color of their skin and how they're perceived and who they're perceived to be. That's the point. So I've mentioned, talked about being an accomplice. You'll sometimes see people use the word ally. You'll see both words being used. I kind of like accomplice because it has this faint sort of criminal undertone that I actually kind of like. I kind of like that sort of stealth aspect to it. So what are we talking about with that word? Partly, it's leveraging my white supremacy to end racism, using that. Alicia T. Crosby is a justice educator and activist whose work addresses the spiritual, systemic, and interpersonal harm people experience from all kinds of injustice. Here's what she says about being an ally. You become an ally when another person confers that title upon you. I won't presume to speak for others, but I know this designation is one that I grant to those who have stood in solidarity with me over time. My allies are people who have worked to amplify my voice, my expressed needs, and my perspectives, who show up for me in ways that reflect that they care for, respect, and desire to honor me, and who are able to accept correction when I share that they have somehow missed the mark. The commitment these people have to my well-being, which includes my personal development and pursuit of equity for my sake, has been proven by time or by their extension of things they know are meaningful to me, like presence and resources. So the qualities of a good ally or accomplice is that you show up time and time again. You bring yourself and your resources. You amplify and promote the voices, the needs, the perspectives of people of color, putting them front and center. You honor their experiences and selves. You accept correction. So these are those central behaviors that those of us who are white can show to make a difference, that humility and risk-taking, putting aside anxieties and fears about how we'll be perceived, and really listening and understanding deeply when we do wrongly. Accepting that systemic white supremacy is the issue, that as white people we benefited from it, and that eliminating all forms of privilege is at the core of anti-racism and anti-oppression. These things are all intersectional. That as we work for the liberation of women, as we work for the liberation of those in poverty, as we work for the liberation of people with disabilities, people who are poor, they are not separate things. And eliminating all forms of privilege moves us there to that liberation for all. And having good intentions does not excuse us from taking responsibility for the impact of our actions. That is so key. I love it that in our covenant of right relations here, we have assume good intentions. I would really like to add to that, right after that, to say, and to take responsibility for the impact of our behaviors, regardless of intention. Because, you know, we can say, well, I didn't know that calling you that awful name would hurt you. I didn't mean to do that. Yeah, but you did, and now you have to own the impact that that has. Because remember, it's not all about us feeling good about ourselves and comfortable that we're good people. Because we're all deeply imperfect. Everyone is. So doing our best to be a good ally, accomplice, by showing up, sharing resources, centering and promoting the voices, the experiences, the needs of people of color. So engaging in these actions over and over again is the path to being effective in anti-racism. It is what will make us more trustworthy to people of color, and enable us to be ultimately effective in dismantling white supremacy, which is the whole point. I want to end with the rest of Chris Crass's reading to All Get Free Together. He says, our goal is to join our hearts and minds to the task of destroying white supremacy in every worldview, policy, law, institution, and governing body of our society. For our faith communities to be places of healing from the nightmare of racism that haunts people of color and white people. For our faith communities to be places of nourishment sustaining the multiracial struggles of our people to advance economic, racial, and gender justice. For our faith communities to be part of the continual process of working within the movement as part of the journey to end oppression in society. For our faith communities to raise our children of all backgrounds to be freedom fighters and practitioners of liberation values. Our goal is for our faith communities to be spiritually alive, learning from and contributing to liberation cultures and legacies. For our faith communities to be welcoming homes for people of all colors, sexualities, classes, ages, abilities, genders, and citizenship status. For our faith communities to regularly invite us into and prepare us for courageous action for collective liberation held in loving community for the long haul. May our faith communities be active agents in the world to help us all get free together. May it be so. Blessed be.